From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Please don't tell me that he's gone. Please, officer, don't tell me that you just did this to him.
Another police killing of another young black man. This one in a suburb of Minneapolis, Wednesday night at about 9 p.m. local time.
You shot 4 bullets into him, sir. He was just getting his license and registration, sir.
The unidentified woman whose voice detailed what she said was the killing of her boyfriend live streamed the video to a Facebook page viewed by more than 1 million people within hours. According to the Minneapolis Star Tribune, friends at the scene identified the victim as Philandro Castile, 32, a cafeteria supervisor at the J.J. Hill Montessori School in St. Paul, Minnesota. The video was posted on a Facebook page belonging to a Lavish Reynolds, but it was unclear if that was the page of the person who streamed the video or a posting by someone else to that page. The page hosting the video was unavailable for a while, but by then, copies of the video had been shared many thousands of times. According to the Minneapolis Star Tribune, a spokesperson for Facebook said in an email that the video was temporarily down due to a technical glitch and was restored once Facebook was able to investigate. Clarence Castile, the victim's uncle, said his nephew had worked in the school cafeteria for 12 to 15 years, quote, cooking for the little kids, closed quote. Philandro's cousin, Antonio Johnson, 31 years old, said Philandro graduated with honors from St. Paul Central High School, where he was a straight-A student. Johnson said his cousin was, quote, a black individual driving in Falcon Heights who was immediately criminally profiled, and he lost his life over it tonight, closed quote. Meanwhile, a second video showing the shooting death of Alton Sterling, a black man shot several times while being held on the ground by police outside a Louisiana convenience store, was posted online Wednesday as federal authorities took charge of the investigation. The new video, as posted by CNN, showed another angle from the video released earlier, closer to the shooting of Sterling by a white Baton Rouge police officer. The earlier video of the encounter, posted online Tuesday night, quickly sparked protests and drew national attention. The new 38-second recording shows Sterling already on the ground, on his back, with one officer kneeling to his left and the other apparently straddling his legs. Although the view is somewhat occluded by one officer's back, the other officer is shown pumping several shots into the torso of the clearly subdued victim. U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch said that the Justice Department's investigation of Hillary Clinton's storage of classified emails on a private server will be closed, and no criminal charges brought against the former Secretary of State. RT's Guyan Chichikayan reports from Washington, D.C.
The head of the Justice Department, Loretta Lynch, says she accepted the FBI's recommendation and no charges will be brought against Hillary Clinton. Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton go back years. He was the one who appointed her as a U.S. attorney in 1999. Her decision not to bring charges against Mrs. Clinton surprised no one, but the FBI's recommendation that no charges were appropriate shocked many. Many lawyers and lawmakers thought that the FBI chief James Comey presented ample evidence that Mrs. Clinton violated a federal statute that makes it a felony to mishandle classified information in a grossly negligent way. The evidence that the FBI presented suggested that she did meet the negligence standard. So Mr. Comey saying that despite all that, they would not recommend charges because they think no reasonable prosecutor will pick up the case was seen by many as a political decision rather than a purely legal one.
House Republicans asked FBI Director James Comey to testify before Congress Thursday. The Republicans are also trying to reconcile Clinton's statements made throughout the investigation that she did not email any classified materials with Comey's statements that 110 emails contained classified information.
I did not email any classified material to anyone on my email. There is no classified material. So I'm certainly well aware of the classification requirements and did not send classified material.
From the group of 30,000 emails returned to the State Department in 2014, 110 emails in 52 email chains have been determined by the owning agency to contain classified information at the time they were sent or received.
Hillary Clinton's emails and the crisis of legitimacy is the title of this commentary by Black Agenda Report's Glenn Ford.
Hillary Clinton has escaped indictment, as almost universally expected, for commingling her email communications as Secretary of State with her personal business, including the global money laundering, bribery, and extortion racket called the Clinton Foundation. The Clintons are capable of infinite corruption. That's why they're in politics, to protect the criminal enterprises of the truly rich people they serve, and to become rich themselves. That is the nature of the system, and the system works. It provides impunity to the powerful. FBI Director James Comey essentially admitted as much when he acknowledged that there was evidence of potential violations of statutes regarding the handling of classified information. A reasonable person in Clinton's position should have known that what she was doing was violating the law. But, he said, the FBI's judgment is that no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case. The public knows perfectly well that what Comey really means is that there's no way he was going to keep the rulers of the United States from getting the president they want. So Hillary gets off, as did the warlord General David Petraeus and other insiders who were not fully prosecuted for clearly breaking the law. Yet President Obama has shattered all historical records in treating whistleblowers as spies. Obama pushed for and got the power to detain people indefinitely without trial or charge, but is so tolerant of systemic criminality among Wall Street bankers that his own attorney general had to briefly admit that the lords of capital are too big to jail. So, on the one hand, the fundamental right to due process under the law has ceased to exist, yet, for the rich, impunity has become all but absolute. The rulers are caught in a crisis of legitimacy. Obscenely concentrated wealth has turned U.S. society into a constitution-free zone for the wealthy, who behave as if they are a separate species. They have exhausted the tolerance even of white Americans, descendants of Europeans who came here hoping to become rich, but now despair of keeping their heads above water and are growing to despise the 1%. Black folks are waking up, angry, after two generations of relative quietude, pushing back against a police state that is coddled by Congress, upheld by the Supreme Court, and unchallenged by the executive branch. The system is leaking legitimacy like a sieve. Donald Trump is seen as illegitimate by probably a majority of Americans, but so is Hillary Clinton. In some ways, Clinton is even more revolting. Most people that hate Trump can point to one or more of his specific policies or statements. However, people are just plain repulsed by Hillary Clinton. If pressed on why they find her so distasteful, folks say she is dishonest, not to be trusted, but usually they offer no particulars. What they really feel is that she is corrupt to the bone, that she personifies the lie that the top of society tells to the bottom. The crisis of legitimacy becomes acute when enough people say, "Who are you to hold power over me?" For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford.
Margaret Kimberly's Freedom Rider column at blackagendareport.com this week is entitled simply, Republicans Dump Trump.
Simply put, the Republicans do not want Trump as their nominee. They poured hundreds of millions of dollars into other campaigns. Jeb Bush and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio each raised at least $100 million. They were the preferred candidates. Trump is a loose cannon, and Trump, more importantly, questions the very foundations of the corporate political parties. He questions austerity. He questions NATO. he's asked, why do we spend so much on NATO? I don't want to cut Social Security, and most of all, the trade deals. This is a very important part of neoliberalism, NAFTA and the subsequent agreements that turn corporations into people and take our rights. Trump has said that he will get rid of these trade deals. And these are things that Republicans, well, the Democrats don't want either, frankly. And you can see the results in Trump's fundraising, or rather lack of fundraising. He had a paltry little over $1 million on hand at the end of May. He now claims to have raised $50 million in June, but there's a lot of skepticism about his figures. It's not very clear, and we'll have to wait until the FEC reports in a couple of weeks come out. But it's an indication, and Hillary Clinton, by the way, he had $1 million on hand. She had $40 million on hand. So rich Republicans are sitting on their hands, or they're giving to Hillary. But this is important, really, because we're being told constantly we have to back Hillary or else Trump. Because Trump, stop Trump, dump Trump, over and over and over again, when there's little chance of him being elected.
You know, he managed to do quite well in the primaries, facing several hundred million dollars. You mentioned Bush, for example, Jeb Bush, Rubio, Cruz. All those people spent way more money than Trump. And yet, both his, like his media personality allure, you know, the fact that he brought ratings basically to the news channels that need ratings in presidential election years to fund the intervening 3 years between them. Literally, their ad revenue keeps them afloat. So he was getting more FaceTime than the people who were buying ads, and also driving the cost of the ads up because of the increased viewership. They really can't turn the cameras off of him, but they've been using the media nonstop to, you know, frame him in one way or another negatively. And that doesn't seem to be working either, looking at the polls.
Yeah, the polls show, they vary. They show a close, even race, or they show Hillary ahead. But as we should all remember from the 2000 election, Gore and Bush, what matters is what states they lead in or are behind in. And she has comfortable leads in the states with the most electoral votes. So I think we'll see a replay of, I don't see any blue states so-called flipping to red this time around. He has high negatives among women. Some 70% of women say they'll never vote for him. That makes it very difficult to get elected. He goes back and forth about self-funding. He's self-funded his primary campaign, but there are also indications there are people involved in his campaign who said he never thought he was going to win.
Right.
His goal was to come in second or something like that.
Right.
And but he spoke to the angst of, he spoke to the racism, first of all, of many voters, independents and Republicans, and I'm sure the Republicans will get rid of open primaries. I'm certain in 2020
yeah.
They'll all be Republican-only contests, so they don't have a replay of this again. When he spoke about immigration, when he said openly that Mexican immigrants were rapists and murderers and that Muslims shouldn't be allowed into the country. That appeal to white nationalism was very attractive to many millions of people. And when he talked about jobs and talked about the trade deals and talked about doing things that are orthodoxy to Democrats and Republicans, these are things that no one, no other Republican, actually very few Democrats either, say anything about. So that's the basis of his appeals in the primary. But now, in order to be president, he needs to have a party behind him, and he needs to have money behind him. And the fact that he can't raise money is an indication they're taking a pass this year.
And then you have the obvious effort by, many believe, the Koch brothers to lift the Libertarian candidate, Gary Johnson, up. He's been polling around 10%. To interject him into the public discourse in order to, you know, with, under the assumption that that would come out of the Republican vote for Trump. But I'm not sure that that's working. And then, of course, what that does is open up space for Jill Stein, who's actually gotten a little press as well.
Yeah, it does. It's unclear. I mean, actually, that is what needs to happen. The two parties need to, they are fracturing, but there needs to be an active process to move that along. Trump, whether he realized it or not, started that process with the Republicans. Bernie Sanders started that process with the Democrats. It's, all along, I know many of his supporters are disappointed, but I'm forced to point out that all along he said he would support Hillary Clinton if she got the nomination. I don't think he thought he had a chance to win. I don't think he saw that he was going to do as well as he did and raise $200 million, mostly from small contributions. I don't think he foresaw the role that he ended up playing, and he was not prepared really to fight for the nomination or to fight afterwards to build a progressive party in the Democrat, or actually outside of the Democratic Party. That is what needs to happen. So people need to stop fearing a fracturing of the Democrats and work towards that. But unfortunately, Sanders was not the person to do it. It was like a tease. But he's trying to save face and trying to find a way around it. But every indication is that he's going to end up endorsing Hillary Clinton.
There are some among Sanders supporters, and just to digress for a moment, the real, I guess if you were going to do a Time Magazine Person of the Year with respect to the U.S. presidential campaign, that Person of the Year would be two lumps of the working class behind mm-hmm. Trump and Sanders. And there are some members of, some folks lined up behind Sanders, including some delegates who aren't going quietly into that good night just yet with this litigation. In fact, last Thursday there was a lawsuit seeking $3 billion from the DNC and from Deborah Wasserman Schultz filed in federal court in Florida. There's litigation that seeks to set aside some of the delegates that were assigned to Clinton, showing the vector between the actual declared vote from the boards of elections and the exit polls, which the exit polls, according to Bob Fitrakis, the lawyer in Ohio that does election work, said that Sanders should win a first ballot victory with the delegates that he should have had based on the exit polls. So the convention itself may end up having some surprises, and then there's going to be the people in the streets there. What advice would you give them?
My advice to the people in the streets and to all Democrats who supported Bernie Sanders is do not support Hillary Clinton. And Sanders is now in the uncomfortable position of facing a revolt from his supporters, and I hope they follow through on it. I hope they do not follow him into the sheep. He was accused of being a sheepdog, and his supporters took a great umbrage at that. But if that's what he turns out to be, they have to turn around and follow somewhere else. Do not support Hillary Clinton. It's, this is the week when the FBI announced, and not a surprise at all to me, that they are not going to charge her for committing the crime of having classified material on a private server. The FBI director said it was sloppy, it was careless, but it didn't rise to the definition of a crime, which was actually a lie, and she didn't intend to. Now, that doesn't go for anybody else. There's no one else who gets to say, well, I didn't intend to commit a crime, right, and gets to skip prosecution because of what we claim to intend. But she was clearly, she was doing personal business as Secretary of State. She was also doing the business of the Clinton Foundation, and she didn't want that on the Department of State servers where they could have been subpoenaed at any time. I'm certain that that's what was going on. But nothing's going to happen. And Comey, the FBI director, made this announcement 1 hour, and a couple of hours later, she and Obama kick off her campaign in North Carolina. So the corruption, the obvious corruption, is too much, or should be too much, for people to stomach. And there has got to be an end to this fear of Democratic losses. I think the fact that Sanders was so popular is an indication that if this fear of this trauma of the Gore defeat from 2000 can be overcome, we really do have a chance to change politics in this country, but not if we keep going down the line with these Democrats.
You know, and looking at the strategic context, you have the establishment structures either crumbling, as in the case of the Republican Party, teetering and just needing a little push in the case of the Democratic Party. And some seem poised to at least give it a shove or two anyway at the convention. But you have a divided working class, divided primarily on the issue of race and by the way people relate to that issue, behind Sanders and Trump. And rather than focusing on the concerns that you are raising here, they seem to be organizing to go to the Republican convention. In fact, they are organizing to go to the Republican convention. There's some, very otherwise clever leftist groups and organizations organizing to protest Trump, which, of course, will put them at odds with Trump's supporters. And from their perspective, the working people that are behind Trump lining up essentially with the establishment of the Republican and Democratic parties and attacking Trump. How do you bridge this problem? Because, of course, racism needs to be dealt with in this country. 240 years into its existence, it's still horrible experience for people and a condition for people. How do you try to build some unity among the working class, which is needed right now?
Well, I think we have to pressure politicians to serve our interests, and that won't end racism. I think, though, it's possible. What Trump has shown us is it's possible for someone, because he had the means, because he had the money to push his way into the primary system, there are millions of people who are looking for a politician to serve their interests. And we have to let go of what we have been doing. We have to recognize that there will still be these divides identity. That's going to be a constant, I'm afraid. But it doesn't have to be an either or. And we have to question some of the things that we're told are left and some things that are right. For example, the issue of immigration. I don't know why immigration gets to be ceded to the right wing. I think there are questions about immigration, about people who are disadvantaged. There are working people who are disadvantaged by immigration. There's a lawsuit right now in Chicago of a firm that hired temporary workers. They only hired Latinos and didn't hire black people. Now there's a lawsuit. So I think that people should find a way to talk about, to bring up issues like immigration, and instead of the only people talking about it are people like Trump, who say that, all Mexican immigrants are rapists and murderers and he's going to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it. Why does this buffoonery and this racism, why is he the only one talking about the issue of immigration and the impact it has on the country? So that it doesn't have to be a racist argument. That is something, but of course, the Democrats now are seen as the pro-immigration party, and they now have millions of new voters because of it, so they're not going to bring it up. So I think that's another way. We have to stop seceding issues and saying that a certain issue is for Democrats and a certain issue is for Republicans. I don't think that's necessarily true.
And actually, the differences are rhetorical only in terms of, ceding that ground to the right wing. That President Obama, a Democrat for two terms, has deported more people than all of the previous presidents combined. And, that's not really attributed to him and the Secretary of State that implemented that policy, who's now the Democratic presumptive nominee.
Yes, that's the other issue. You know, one of my big issues against the Stop Trump movement and people calling him fascist is that the system is fascist. We get with Obama and Clinton, you get fascists. They come from the right schools and they say the right words and they have the right friends and they can raise money. But the reality is the same. And people going to the conventions to protest Trump should be protesting Hillary Clinton just as much. She's the one who's actually killed people for all the talk of calling him a fascist. She and Obama worked together to destroy Libya and create a horrendous humanitarian disaster affecting millions of people. So the protest also has to be directed at her. It should be directed at Obama in the waning months of his administration. There are two videos released this week of two more black men murdered by police. And any protests, already there's, you know, hashtags and protests and meet here and rally there. If the protest doesn't go to the White House and demand a Justice Department investigation, it's a waste of time. So we have the first black president who has done absolutely nothing, not one, no matter how damning the video evidence is, who has not prosecuted one killer cop. And if people can demonstrate against Trump, they ought to be able to demonstrate against Obama, too, because he is the person who is the obstacle. I blame him squarely for this continuation of police violence. And that's the other thing that people have to do. They all need to be protested. The Democrats, the Republicans, the more likely someone is to be president, that means the worse they are for the rest of us. So people can, I think, protesting Trump, frankly, is a waste of time. He's not going to, Marco Rubio, for example, isn't going to the convention. They're very prominent Republicans who aren't even going to show up. They're not raising money for him. They don't want to be seen with him. He is a non-issue. He's going to be a footnote in history. But if people want to talk about Trump, they should talk about the fact that some of the issues he raised are issues that Democrats could raise and still and win, but it shows you that they don't want to win with the issues that are of most importance to the American people. They don't want to get rid of trade deals because that's why they exist now. They exist to serve corporate interests. But so I think I'm afraid that people are going to learn the wrong lessons from Trump's success. And Bernie Sanders is going to allow Democrats to forget the reasons for his success when he does the inevitable and throws in the towel to Hillary.
And, you know, there's further evidence of this even. And it's almost a tone deafness by the establishment at the platform committee discussions for the Democratic Party platform, which is essentially an unenforceable statement of stuff that even the candidate doesn't have to claim as their basic platform.
That's true.
And some of those same issues where Clinton could at least nominally be running with those things without ever having to mouth the words herself, and yet they're fighting tooth and nail at the platform committee.
Sure they are. Well, it's a bit of a joke, let's be honest. Even though it doesn't really mean much, she and other Democrats want to stand and run on what the platform committee says. So there's no talk about the 15-hour minimum wage, no talk about justice for the Palestinians, none of the things. And you know, there was a big deal made about Cornel West, and Sanders was going to put him on the platform committee. But everything was defeated. So it's turned out to be a joke. But it also shows you how determined they are to control the political agenda and keep any progressive issues from even being written down on a piece of paper that technically doesn't matter much. But apparently it does matter enough for them to decide what they want to keep.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.